Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Confused Breakfast Podcast. Do you remember the pure joy of a trip to the Ritty, to the video rental store as a kid? The excitement of walking down the aisles, browsing the names and the artwork, and finally deciding on the movie you were going to take home with you. Sure, it's hard to beat the ease of the modern era and streaming platforms where you don't even have to leave your house, but there was something truly special about making that trip as a child, picking a movie out by hand, and wondering why the clerk keeps looking at your hat and laughing during checkout. On this podcast, we revisit and dissect some of our favorite childhood movies from that magical era to see if they still move us the way they did as kids. I'm your host, Mike Schulte, and joining me as always, two men that I will refer to forever as Squints and Yeah Yeah. I'll let you figure out who's who. Sean Pryor and AJ Vince, how the heck are you guys?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't
of
know.
Of course.
I don't know. I'm the great Hambino.
Oh, okay. Okay. I'm probably Palidorus and Yeah Yeah put together. Yeah, I've got to be honest.
I'm probably Squints, and I just watch Mike all the time. Just watch.
Nope.
Oiling and lotioning, and lotioning and oiling.
I do
his
that before
beard.
The podcast, man.
His beard. Oh.
That was not what I had in mind. You know, AJ does the yeah. You know, from the recent podcast.
So oh, yeah, yeah.
That's where I was going
with
it.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah.
And Sean has glasses.
He wasn't in the CEO mode yet.
No, no.
Well, you know what we always do when we get started here? We do review time, but I had someone ask us why we always start the episodes off with reviews and voicemails, and I wanted to give a description of that. There's two reasons. One, maybe you're new to the podcast, right? We want you to know that you're joining a cool community of people who love classic movies and who very much enjoy this podcast.
100%.
It's a safe place to be.
It is.
Two, we are very appreciative of everybody, and I mean, we've been asking you to leave voicemails and reviews, and you've been doing it, so we have to honor that. We have to immortalize you on recording, so I really don't think it's that hard.
It's our due diligence,
yeah.
And like, yeah. I mean, we will put the ones that are negative up on there too.
100%.
We will talk about the negative reviews of our show, because yeah. We're an unbiased program here,
yeah.
And we want you to enjoy, no matter what, no matter what a bias you prescribe to.
I also love like how we exist in people's minds' eyes.
Yeah.
So we've been most of the time it's we are three nerds when some sort of a love triangle.
Yep.
Yep.
In the basement, and there's snacks around.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the gist.
We like to know what you think about us.
Yeah. Exactly. How you picture us doing this.
Yep.
Well, let's start it up. It's review time. Review time. This is from Ali Mo, says, makes me feel like I'm 10 years old again. Loving the podcast, found out about it while scrolling through TikTok, and I'm so glad it popped up on my FYU page. You know what that means? Or For You page?
For You page.
Yeah, For You page.
Yeah, yeah.
This podcast takes me back to the days of my youth when me and my brother would watch Three Ninjas over and over and make fun of the way Emily says, did I hear your new name is Aki? Keep up the good work, guys. I'm telling my friends about the podcast. Thank you so much.
Sweet. Yes. Thank you.
Fantastic like review.
That's always the best thing you can do for us is just tell your friends how much fun you have listening to it.
And
that's
you can
it.
Do that on your Apple Podcast review, or you can do that on Facebook like our friend Lucian Starkiller. He's been very active in our Facebook group. He left us a review that says, I first found you guys on TikTok a couple months ago. They were very funny clips, so I decided to find you on my app I use for podcasts, which is called Pocket Cast.
Nice.
Sorry that's not Apple, so I can't rate you, but if I could, I would give it 5 karate chops.
Damn.
I'm all caught up now, and I think my favorite was Lethal Weapon, and obviously the last couple minutes of The Price is Right. If you are new to the podcast, go back and listen to The Price is Right at the end. Looking forward to new stuff. Hopefully Point Break, Dazed and Confused, Sandlot, Goodfellas, and Tommy Boy are in the pipeline.
Wow.
This was from a while back.
Yeah.
We already hit Days of Confused and today is Sandlot.
Dude, we have
so.
Good
hey,
news for you today.
How about that? Two off that list. Goodfellas, man.
Yeah.
I'm stoked about that.
It's going to be fun, man. So leave us a review if you can. And also, you can call us and leave a voicemail. That's a fun thing we've been doing. You can let out that anger and frustration like today's voicemailer is going to do. 319-804-9596. Let's hear what today's caller has to say, shall we?
Okay. Yes.
Hello, boys. My name is Eric. My fake name's Chris. I got a couple complaints, a couple things that are rubbing me the wrong way. So, for one, I went through a lot of therapy after my childhood. I really loved video games a lot. I was the guy pulling for Mortal Kombat. I had all my friends coming over to my house before we went to go watch the movie. We went. It was a raging success. It was an absolute banger. a movie, which put me in a terrible predicament when the sequel came out. And I defended it. I told them that even though they're hopping into little gerbil balls and going around the earth inside of these little pipes and everything, yeah, yeah, this is going somewhere. And even though there's terrible CGI in the very end of the first movie, I mean, like an entire amazing movie and just ruined with a 5 second, your soul belonged to me, you know, all that stuff with, oh my gosh, I couldn't live that down. And then eventually I came around, I realized this is a shit-tacular movie and it ruined the entire franchise for me. I quit playing the video games. I was inconsolable. And you triggered me. You brought that, all that back. And so now here I am listening to you guys week after week in my gym, rage listening to you. And it doesn't even matter if you're talking about Uncle Buck this week. I'm still hung up on Mortal Kombat, and I will be. I am. You have stunted my growth. As a 40-year-old man, I will die.
Oh.
Yeah, this is Derek again. I got cut off. No, I apologize. We both had some stuff there that we didn't mean. But anyways, keep up the good podcast. I'm going to leave you a star and a rating because I don't really do that stuff, but I feel that I owe it as a way to make amends to you and make peace with the world. And I wish you guys nothing but continued success. And I hope that that life continues to treat you with the mediocrity that you deserve. And namaste.
How dare you?
What a lovely, namaste. Lovely man.
That was fantastic.
Well, there's a lot to unpack there, much like with your childhood and everything, apparently. But that's, you know, we aren't those people.
That's a whole nother podcast.
That's a whole nother podcast. However, I know exactly what you're talking about with, like, watching and waiting for that second one to come around. And you're, like, you're convincing yourself that it's good and it's worth it and it's worthy of your love of that franchise.
Yeah.
And just coming to terms.
The signs were there at the end of number one.
Yeah,
you should have known better.
I know. And you're like, well, at least they got Robin Shue back and all that. And you're just like, nope, it didn't come around. And you're right. The hamster balls, you're just like, what is happening? Why is Atlasphere coming through again in Mortal Kombat 2? I get it, man.
I remember watching the sequel at my mom's taekwondo studio, and it was like movie night for the kids who went there that she taught at, and we sat down to watch it, and I remember being like so fucking stoked for it. Like the music came on, that's badass.
Yeah.
And then when not Raiden, even though he's a great actor in the second one, I can't remember his name, but
James Remar.
James Remar
wasn't Raiden.
Great actor. horrible Raiden. Oh my god! And once he came on, I just remember seeing all of those kids' smiles just fold back up. Into just like a frown and like, okay, let's go play basketball or something. You know, it's just like, oh yeah. Boy. But is it a fun movie? Yes.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I was really hyped until I heard the guys in BMX gear for the ninja robots.
Yep.
And I heard the whoop, whoop, when they put their arms up, I was like, I'm done.
I'm out.
Yep, that's it.
Dude, we feel you, man. And that's why we're such a great community here. You can call us and tell us your thoughts about stuff like that. Just, it's a safe place.
Yeah.
Call us up, 319-804-9596. And the last final way to support us and join our community is we got a Patreon. You go on there. We got amazing perks for you to show your support to us, voting on upcoming movie topics, access to weekly episodes that are just for you, patreon.com/confusedbreakfast. We always honor our top patrons, man. They're the best. Dane, Joel, Tony B, Jordan, Nick Marula, Joseph Kenziuk, Alicia, Camden Griffith, Francisco Rivera, Cameron J, Kirlana, Big Andy, Bud Larson, Anita Richard, hilarious, Travis Hunziker, Brian Hernandez, Nick Fulkerson, Kale James, Senior Frog, and Mr. and Mrs. Roommate.
Hey, all right.
You guys are the best, and we very, very much appreciate you in our
community.
Thank
you, guys.
You're
appreciate
the best. Around.
Ooh, we should just put a clip after.
Actually, you're right.
Yep.
Okay, done deal.
Okay.
Wait for next episode,
just,
guys.
Just, you're the best. I'm done.
And then moving along.
Yep.
All right, so no more time. Like we said, we do a quick little bit in the beginning. We invite you into our community, and then it's game time.
That's it. Enough fucking bullshit.
It is time to introduce today's movie. On this episode, we're going to discuss one of the absolute best movies in multiple categories, including summer, sports, and coming of age. A movie that has taught us about PF Flyers, The Great Bambino, chewing tobacco, s'mores, how to properly insult another kid, the importance of lotioning and oiling, and perhaps most importantly, this movie taught us about the preciousness of time spent with your friends as kids.
And how to kiss a woman.
How to kiss a woman. Good.
Yeah.
And long. We are, of course, talking about 1993's The Sandlot.
Yes.
Oh, that song is so great.
So good.
Love it.
Before we get started with the full movie breakdown, as always, we like to hook you up with some pertinent, important background info on the movie. Sean, take it away.
Shawnee Pertinent. That's right. Let's do this. Produced by Mark Berg, Dale De La Torre, and William S. Gilmore. It's going to be fun this round.
Oh, yeah.
Written by David Mickey Evans and Robert Gunter. Music by David Newman. Cinematography by Anthony B. Richard. Casting by Sherry Rhodes. Production design by Chester Kaczynski?
Oh.
Something Polish. Directed by David Mickey Evans himself. Also directed Radio Flyer. Uncredited, though. The final season, which is about a baseball team here in Norway, Iowa. The Sandlot 2 and First Kid, among many others. The cast. Tom Geary. Mike Vitar. Viter, Art LaFleur, Patrick Renna, Chauncey Lapardi, Marty York, Brandon Quinton Adams, Grant Yelt, Shane Obadinsinski, Victor DeMatia, Dennis Leary, Karen Allen, Marley Shelton, and James Earl Motherfucking Jones.
Yeah.
Go.
The film was based off of a real experience by director and co-writer David Mickey Evans. Evans grew up playing baseball in the summer, and his brother tried to win a spotlight in the neighborhood baseball game by retrieving the ball that had been hit over a fence. Evans's brother encountered a dog named Hercules that actually bit his brother on his way back over the fence. The film's original title was actually supposed to be The Boys of Summer, which is actually a fucking great title.
I really like that title. Yeah.
Honestly, that's like the art version of this movie's title.
Yeah.
And I'll get into it later, but I think this movie is like a more of an art movie to me rather than just like just any old kids movie. But Evans had to change the title due to a book title having the same name, which was also about baseball.
And a song.
And a great song.
But Don Henley didn't give a fuck. He's like, hell yeah.
Yeah, I love this movie.
Hell
whatever.
Yeah.
The director originally had
intended... I love the movie you haven't written yet.
Whenever there's a movie about this...
Don Henley.
Don Henley.
Yeah.
The director...
I'm wearing a shirt right now.
Oh, yeah, you are, yeah.
Oh, damn, I didn't even notice that.
It's Don Henley.
Big fan.
Don Henley.
Fucking asshole.
I didn't like that joke at all. Wow.
Well, prove it.
You're lucky it's your birthday. The director originally had intended on casting 9 to 10-year-old kids, but quickly realized they needed older kids instead, so he kind of just went like 1 year above. He's like 11 to 12 to 13.
Ain't nobody that's
about what it takes when you're trying to get the right...
Yeah, that's like 9 to 10 is like they don't listen, and then right when they hit 11, they kind of have a listening ear.
Yeah.
That's what I hear. The hardest part to cast was Ham. At the last minute, Patrick Renna came to audition, and the producers expedited the actor to Salt Lake City. David Mickey Evans had Tom Geary, Smalls, and Mike Vitar, Benny, meet and hang out before the rest of the cast to get them to feel like best friends. And so when they arrived on set to like meet all the other kids, who actually bonded like right away, they like all the other kids looking at Benny and Smalls, they thought that they were like they had been
they
friends
had
for a long time.
Right. That's okay. A great director move.
Yeah,
huh?
Absolutely. The film mostly shot in and around Salt Lake City, Utah, in 42 days. Utah had a huge heat wave during filming, which is pertinent to it being based in the San Fernando Valley at the time.
Yep.
Ironically, the pool scene in this movie was like 42 degrees
the
out.
The one day.
And so when you see like Squints chattering his teeth, it's for real.
That's so awesome.
The film was released on April 7th, 1993, and grossed $4 million on its opening weekend with a budget of $7 million. The film went on to make $34.3 million. Mm. And that's what I got for now.
Well, hell yeah. You know, we move on from Sean's little dealio. We like to give you a sense of, you know, this movie's all about nostalgia, right? But how does that nostalgia rate against real life modern day? So first, we got to dive into that nostalgia meter. We talk about the first time we saw the movie and what we thought about it and what our rating was. AJ, you remember the first time you saw this one?
So you know how you guys always give me crap about how I always see movies? It's either a family affair or... I come in at the middle of it at TBS. Well, this is actually a fun little mix of that. And we have the clamshell, like, VHS of this. However, it never went to the beginning. No one was ever kind enough to rewind. Okay. So it was always started. It always started like with Smalls, young Smalls.
Yep.
Kind of figuring his, asking his dad how to play.
That's just always where it started.
Bill. That's where it always started. Rewatching this, I was like, I've never seen the opening
of
this movie.
That's so weird, AJ. I can't believe you didn't see the beginning of the movie.
Yeah, I know. It's really shocking, guys.
Wow.
But how do I...
Go back to every single episode we've ever done, and it's exactly like
that. AJ, what's your first experience? Well, I never saw the beginning of it till now.
My thing is, like, how on earth... I owned the movie, but I was just so impatient that I never let it go to the beginning.
Hey, for those listening that maybe never had a VCR, I mean, we're talking a solid 5 minutes to rewind that thing, and that is way too long to wait.
And I'm just saying, like, I don't know. I never saw him walking into the stadium. I don't remember that. Like, nothing. I don't remember.
Did you second guess yourself? Be like, did I hit the right one?
I thought oh, is this when he starts talking and he's about to be watching Benny? And then it goes into, like, his little, I don't know.
Oh, look at me. I'm a sports announcer.
Longest flashback ever, you know, that kind of a thing. But no, like, I don't know why. And then I never saw the little pickup game that their team's playing. Yeah, it was fucking wild, bro. This was a great movie. I loved it. And I honestly, when I was a kid, I wanted to watch this all the time. So I'd have to say this was like an 8.5.
Mm-hmm. Nice. What about you, Sean?
Yeah, well, honestly, it's good that I'm going next because it's kind of similar story. I have seen the first 10 minutes of this film, but like maybe the first 5 minutes was cut off for me. And so the way that I watched this was like we used to rip shit off of TV all the time with VHS. And I remember the film starting out with Radio Flyer, actually, which is kind of weird because the director, uncredited, directed that as well. Oh, yeah. But I remember like the first scene of that, it was like Tom Hanks and his little boy like walking down the street with like the wagon or whatever. Yep. And then it cut immediately to him all grown, Squints or Smalls all grown up in the announcer. And then it like faded into them in the song. Hup, hup. You know, right into that. So I kind of missed that too. But yeah, just like AJ, I wanted to watch this movie all the time, and I would probably give it an 8 back then. Mm. Yeah.
I was 11 when this came out, so this was like right in my wheelhouse, right? Yeah. Those kids were the same age as me. And I did really like the movie. It was definitely a VHS rental. We would always go rent this one, but it wasn't like the one that you got every other time. You get it like once a year. Be like, oh yeah, Sandlot, that's great. Mm-hmm. Definitely loved it as a kid, but I was more of I had a bad spell with baseball. In fact, you know, a Patreon episode, let's talk about our experiences with baseball and sports as a young kid.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll tell you all about that story. But I had a bad run-in in the baseball world, and then I think I just checked out of wanting to be a baseball player.
Yeah.
So, like, I moved on more to, like, Mighty Ducks is where I'm like, yeah, this is my sports movie. But overall, like, really great movie. It was just a flat 7. Like, oh, this is, whenever it's on, I'll watch it.
Yeah.
Okay. But didn't actively go, this is my favorite movie by any means. Yeah. So,
okay.
So we'll talk about that on the Patreon. Oh, really fun.
So much sports in my life.
I know.
Oh, man.
So, we'll be like, Sean, what was your childhood sports like? I watched my friends play one time, and that was it.
Walking around.
I watched them play one time, but then I got really hot because I was wearing full black shirt and black baggy jeans.
I don't know if you guys ever played the sport of dressing up like like Brandon Lee in The Crow and just walking around your house.
Damn, that's a sport.
Did you guys ever play that competitiveness?
That overcoat must get really hot.
I had a trench coat, and I got in big trouble for it because of the whole.
Yep.
The whole shooting that
the Columbine thing.
That was a workout for me too, man.
Wow. Well, tune into the Patreon if you want to hear that one tomorrow. But before we get into the full film review scene by scene, AJ always does some research for us, hooks us up with the ratings and reviews of the critics at the time when this came out. What do you got, AJ?
You know what I'm starting with. 3, 2, 1. The
tomato meter. We love it.
Yeah.
We fucking nailed it, dude.
Yeah, we're so good at this now. So on the tomato meter, the Sandlot comes in critical reviews 63%. Yeah, I'm gonna need a drink after that run number. 63% from critics, but the audience score came in higher, 89%.
Oh, right.
So
I like it.
Audiences really liked it a lot more. If we move over to IMDb, this is 7.8.
You are AJ.
Thank you. Out of 10. And 55 on Metascore.
Hmm.
Okay. Well, let's get some positivity in our lives here, quick.
Please.
Okay.
Love it, dude.
Let's do that first, and then I'll move over to some critical shiz. 10 out of 10. If you rate this less than 10 stars, who hurt you?
Wow.
SRT Point Man on December 26th, 2019. This is the quintessential movie for kids and adults alike. For adults, it brings back memories of a simpler time when you played with your friends until dusk. For kids, it's a reminder that there's more to life than playing video games. Everyone can enjoy this movie. Honestly, one of the greatest family movies ever made.
Nailed it.
Cool.
Pretty big.
Wow, there's some good people in the world.
Yeah, there is. There is. But hey, don't knock on indoor kids. We're fine.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, don't
hey, the
us.
Indoor kid next to me really likes this movie.
Yeah, you're right.
I love it, man.
Just saying.
I loved watching people be outside.
Oh, that's what it's
man,
like.
Man, they look like they're having fun.
Oh, man.
When you used to watch...
back to the crow I go.
When you used to watch outside, was it like I pictured the blinds that you can twist, but I picture that you just pull one up and just stare out from your
I'm
dark room.
I'm reaping all the benefits.
You're some sort of John Lovitz in there.
With the curtain. All right, continue, AJ.
10 out of 10 for baseball fans and fans of childhood.
I'm a big fan.
By Lisa FWG01, July 31st of 2008. A great time to watch that movie.
Yeah.
I have watched this movie every time I have come across it. It really is that good. If you, like me, grew up in that area, you simply can't help being caught up in the nostalgia and this simple but perfectly written movie.
Oh, yeah.
All right, so I'll give you some criticals real quick. The Sandlot lays down life's little lessons with the feathery touch of a sacrifice bunt. During the ball retrieving scenes, and as the gang learns to work as a team off the field, the movie never loses its quick pace or its sense of fun. Old baseball wisdom. The best teams win with strong fundamentals.
Mm.
Fundamentals.
Emphasis on the fun.
You bet. Raj.
Okay,
Ryan,
okay, here he comes.
Is the Chicago
home
sun,
run,
sun
I bet.
75 out of 100.
Okay.
These days, too many children's movies are infected by the virus of winning, as if kids are nothing more than underage pro athletes and the values of Vince Lombardi prevail. It's not how you play the game, but whether you win or lose. This is a movie that breaks with that tradition, that allows its kids to be kids, that shows them in the insular world of the imagination and dreaming that children create and create entirely apart from adult domains.
Mm.
Okay, Raj.
Thank
okay,
you, Raj.
Thanks, Raj.
Okay.
All right, negativity land. Here we go.
There has to be some negative ones.
I've just got a couple here, and they're short and sweet. 33, the Seattle Post-Intelligencer.
Which is something I've never heard of. Okay.
Neither have I.
It's defunct now, I bet.
The Sandlot is so exploitive of the myth of baseball and rings, so false as a nostalgia piece, and is so unfunny as a comedy that it makes the Bad News Bears look like Pride of the Yankees.
Are they saying Bad News Bears is a bad movie?
Like it's a bad movie, but they make it look good.
Wow. Yeah. So they just don't like baseball.
Yeah, they're just not baseball guys.
Or no, as to quote Sean, which should be a shirt someday, you just don't like joy.
You just don't like joy.
It should be a shirt someday.
USA Today, Mike Clark gave it a 25 out of 100. A baseball nostalgia piece all weirded out by flashes of supernatural horror. This early 60s remembrance is like sitting through a double bill of Field of Dreams and the Goonies. And apparently that's a bad thing.
Wait, hold on. This guy doesn't want to watch Field of Dreams followed by Goonies?
Yeah, apparently he doesn't want that.
We don't, like, what?
This person sucks.
You just don't like joy.
Yes.
All right, this is the only number one, or only 1 out of 10 star review that I got to give you, okay? Am I missing something? March 20th, 2004. Warning, this contains spoilers.
Oh,
contains spoiler.
Thank you very much.
Because as we know, everyone goes to IMDb before they watch a movie.
They're trying to save our day.
Good God.
I view this movie on the enthusiastic recommendation from friends. Based on that and the great comments on IMDb, I guess I don't get it. My wife and I both thought this was possibly one of the worst movies we had ever seen. The boys' acting was wooden and terrible. The story was ridiculous. Maybe if you were 6 or 7 years old, it might be believable, but any adult should find this movie barely watchable. The main character can't throw a baseball to save his life until his new friend tells him to throw it like when he delivers newspapers. Then he throws it like a pro. Come on. The ragtag group easily defeats an organized little league team, huh? Babe Ruth appears in the friend's dream but looks like and talks like George Burns. Wasn't Joe Don Baker available?
Hell yeah. All right. You got that right.
Then the white junkyard owner turns out to be James Earl Jones and just happens to have a baseball signed by all the Yankees. What a pile of garbage. I think you missed the point, bro.
It's so confusing to me how someone could watch that movie and come up with that.
Well, who's going to watch and be like, just think, this couldn't possibly be real.
Yeah.
Babe Ruth can't show up in dreams.
Yeah, no fucking shit.
That's the mysticism of childhood, though. Yeah. Like, especially like with a movie like The Goonies or this, or you know, like even fucking Field of Dreams is not even like a kids movie, but it's just no one, like we talk about all the time. Why can't you suspend your disbelief for a fucking second?
This guy fucking loved Bloodsport because they told him everything that was going on.
No, and because they said this is true,
this
bro.
This is it. Frank Dukes is real.
I believe it all. I believe it all.
To this credit, though, anytime, dude, whenever I'm watching a movie, it goes, based on true stories, I go, oh. Ooh. And I always like nudge my wife, go, oh, it's based on true stories.
Ooh, look at that.
Turns out that one, the name is the same. Yeah. And that's based on a true story, dude.
Yeah. Actual events. It's like, yeah, we pretty much made most of it up, but it's actual.
Honestly, actual unless events. It's like Spielberg, it's probably not based on true events.
No. Fuck that guy. Well, is that it, AJ?
That's all I got there, friends. That's all I got.
Well, before we get started, I want to give a quick shout out to our sponsor, Cedar Ridge Distillery.
Yeah.
As this podcast started to catch on, we had numerous companies reaching out to us about being a sponsor, but we knew we wanted to partner with somebody local, and we knew we wanted to rep a product that we actually did use and love, not like ballcleaner.com. Like, I don't need that. My balls are clean.
They're doing just fine.
I could use that.
Actually. But a damn dude drink a lot of Cedar Ridge. So partnering up with Cedar Ridge was an absolute no-brainer for us. One of the fastest growing whiskey companies in America, who was named Distillery of the Year in 2017, which is made right in our backyard. And we do truly love all the products from the Quintessential American Single Malt, their whiskey collaboration with Slipknot, another Iowa staple. And of course, the flagship bourbon, which I am drinking right now. If you're in Iowa or around the Midwest, you can likely find some at your favorite local establishments. If you want to give it a shot but are elsewhere in the country, you can order online at cedarridgewhiskey.com, have it delivered right to your house. We really hope you make it a point to grab some of this delicious whiskey and see for yourself why we love it so much and so many other people do. And we're so proud to have them sponsoring our podcast. I mean, it's an absolute honor. So leave us a voicemail, leave us a message. If you've never tried it and you bought some, we want to know all about it. We want to know what you think. So please drink responsibly as always. And CedarRidgeWhiskey.com.
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 And all together now, two, three.
CedarRidgeWhiskey.com. Sunday. Well, boys, what do you say we put in some Big Chief chewing tobacco, grab our baseball gloves, and run past the pool to see Wendy Peppercorn on our way to the sandlot to play some ball with our best friends?
The best.
Here we go. In 1962, Scott Smalls moves with his mother and stepfather Bill to a new neighborhood in California and struggles to make new friends. One afternoon, he decides to follow a group of neighborhood boys and watches them play an improvised game of baseball at a small field, which they call the sandlot. Smalls has his chance to make friends, but his inability to catch or throw a ball makes the other players laugh at him, and he leaves in embarrassment, as he should. The next day, Benny, who is the best player in the neighborhood, invites him to rejoin their game. He proceeds to give Smalls advice and helps him earn the respect of the other players and officially joins the team as a friend.
Dude, such Stand By Me vibes.
You think so?
Right away. Just because of the narration.
Yeah.
And like, I think it's a formula that really fucking works for this movie, though. Like, I'm not sure there's... I haven't watched it in a little while, but Stand By Me, if there's narration throughout the film... unless he's like telling a story or something like that, maybe, because like he tells that pie story or whatever. But I think it works really well, and I think David Mickey Evans does a fantastic job.
Who is the director and writer. He's
director
also
and writer.
The narrator.
Yeah, he narrates the film as well, and which was a fact that I didn't know until researching this, and it's super fucking cool.
Yeah.
Because it's such a personal story to him, yep. which I'll get into later, but I think it works really, really well with this.
Yeah, and in the intro, it just all kind of works for the yep. intro because it's setting up. You're going, okay, what, like AJ yesterday, like, oh, what is this? I don't even understand what's happening. And then you're like, oh, this is the guy, and oh, there's a photo. Oh, he's going to tell us this cool story.
Yeah.
And it really immediately draws you in and go, okay, well, what's the biggest pickle they've ever been in? Like, I don't understand. This is going to be awesome. Mm-hmm. I mean, you just, even watching this for the 100th time, you're like, yeah, here we go. Mm-hmm. Let's do this. It's going to be awesome. Man. And I had a similar experience. I moved with a month left in school, I moved from St. Louis, Missouri to Cedar Rapids, Iowa in my 7th grade year. So I was a little older than them, but that really sucks, man.
You automatically feel weird, I bet.
You're and you don't have enough time to make friends at school.
Yeah.
And like, you just, now you're in your neighborhood. You're like, okay.
Yeah, make friends the hard way.
Hey, kid. Oh, shoot. You know, like, it's just a weird thing, and it really captures that so well of the, like, oh, shit, I don't know what I'm doing here. Mm-hmm. And that's a really the most important thing in your life at that point is, like, having friends, and his mom's really pushing it on him, and he's like, I don't know how. I don't know what to do. This is so weird. So I thought it was amazing.
Yeah, especially not being in school and everything. You know, you like, even if you tried to make friends in school, which is also impossible, like, I mean, in that aspect anyway, like, you see them every day at least, you know, so you have a chance every day. In summer, you're just like, well, I guess I'll go to the pool and see who I can see, you know. Yeah,
be the awkward kid sitting in the pool staring at people in a crow shirt and trench coat.
Only darkness prevails.
You're in the pool.
It's sunny out, kid.
I need it for my knees. My knees are arthritic at 10 years old.
Well, I understand that. So I'll be honest with you, like, his opening narrative, like, this time, it gave me goosebumps, man. It's really wonderful. Mm-hmm. Like, it's really good. And he's talking about, like, it's like the most one of the most important summers and, like, the biggest pickle that we've ever been in. And I love, like, the reference, because yeah gets into a pickle at that point too, and they're like pickup game that they're playing or whatnot. And like, I was like, yeah, this is great. You know, finally seeing it for the first time.
Finally being like, oh, this is a cool movie.
It like screams to, like, the production design and everything like that. It feels like the 60s.
Yeah.
Is that a thing they did to make it look that way?
I think so. Like, even, like, I noticed watching it for the second time for this show, the U-Haul was like a different.
Yes.
Like a different looking.
Old school.
Yeah. And like all the cars, obviously, it just, and the clothes and the music definitely puts you right there.
Totally.
Obviously, none of us have ever been there, but, like, it feels like that. But, like, we are all of the generation of where we didn't have cell phones or, like, video games to, like, really do. I mean, we kind of had video games, I guess, but we had mostly, like, riding our bikes.
Summertime
bullshit, like going to the pool with your buddies and stuff like that. And so totally. I think that's why it hits so hard right away.
Yep.
And, like, right away, I'm just like, yep, I don't care what
cool.
happens.
Here we go.
Yep.
And they do a really good job of setting up Smalls as a complete fucking nerd, too. Yeah. Like, they do such a great job of that with, like, the Erector set and that god-awful hat that he has.
My God.
I mean, we got to talk about the hat.
We got to talk about the hat. Because, yeah. And if we're not to maybe blow it too early here, but if we're going to take one thing, I feel like I still want it to be that hat.
Are you going the hat?
I almost want that hat. Or the hat that he gets from Benny. But yes.
No, okay, you're picking that hat.
I'm picking that hat.
Then. What are you picking of this movie, Sean?
I'm picking Hercules.
You can take Hercules.
maybe he's not necessarily a prop, but I want Hercules so bad. Yeah. We'll get into it later, but I got kind of emotional watching this movie.
Well,
yeah. I used to have a Mastiff, but yeah, we'll get there.
I would take Wendy Peppercorn's whistle.
Fuck. Yeah,
you would.
Just smell it and lick it.
It just smells like coconut oil. Now, with that hat, I mean, like, I have never seen a hat like that in my entire life. And I had to even just go, okay, what? Why is this a thing?
Did you look it up?
Yeah. And apparently it was for fishermen.
It
was meant to just be an extra far out bill to really protect your face.
It was a legit fishing hat, like, back then.
It was before they came up with, like, the all around hat that was floppy and
they're
like, oh, this will be really cool because then you can just turn it kind of with the sun. And
yeah.
I mean, the fact they even found that, and then the fact that he's wearing that, thinking it's an acceptable thing. Yeah. He takes his. I had one of those plastic gloves.
Did you?
Like he talks about.
I was going to ask about that. Yeah. Like, what the fuck is that?
It's like a. It's a children's toy. It's for like a wiffle ball. You know, like there's no. It's not leather. It's made out of plastic. It's not meant to catch a baseball with. Yeah. And I mean, I had one as like a 4-year-old.
Yeah.
So that just goes to show Smalls.
He's just out.
He
of it.
Got a glove when he was probably 4, and then never played sports.
Yeah.
Ever from that moment until now, he's like, oh, I got a glove,
and Uncle probably bought it for him. It's like, hey, kid, here's a
come on, play sports, please.
I want you to play baseball. I'm gonna force it on you.
And
yeah.
I think too that maybe he got that. That was his dad's hat. Maybe. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's kind of how I was
like, not
too.
Dennis Leary, but like his dad,
yeah,
his real dad or whatever, yeah.
Because his dad was probably an L7 weenie too, probably. Just like him.
Yeah. Probably.
That brings me to Bill. And
we got
to
talk Dennis Leary.
One more thing on the hat real quick, okay. is that I know that the actor, he wants that hat. So like they've talked about like the props that they kept from the film and everything, and he wants that hat so bad, but apparently it's in like the MLB
Oh,
like
yeah, it's in the Hall of Fame baseball hall.
Yeah, serious? Yeah, and so he, oh, I mean, God. I don't think they
I
could ever
think
give it to him.
Let him have that one.
Yeah.
Who are you?
But
again?
not even the character who wore it can get it. So.
That's why you got to steal that shit and go,
yeah,
I don't know what happened
dude,
to that.
Yeah. Hit up Nick Cage, National Treasure.
I wanted the hat. None of us wanted the baseball, the Babe Ruth ball, or the murderer's throw ball.
Right.
Wow. Okay.
Nope.
We are nerds.
Dude,
okay.
I could buy that. Okay.
James Earl Jones glasses.
Yeah. Okay.
Pretty cool.
Wait, why is he wearing glasses? Never mind.
All right.
We're
wow.
We'll get there.
So people don't
we'll
see
get there.
No.
Okay, guys.
So going back to his relationship though with Bill, I love it. It's such a timid like relationship he has, and like Dennis Leary, it's like he would be an intimidating stepdad. You know what I mean? Like
the cast were intimidated by him.
Was that right?
Yeah.
Oh, I think it would be. He doesn't come off like as a mean dude in this movie, but he does come out. He does kind of come off like, yeah, no, I'll teach you how to play catch and everything. He's like, but let's just keep it on a first name basis and no eye contact. Okay, all right, sounds good. That's how it was.
Well, yeah, even like him sneaking into like his trophy room or whatever, and like just like sneaking a peek and stuff like that. You guys haven't had stepdads, have you?
No.
Okay. So yeah,
not that I know.
Hell no. Jesus.
All right. You guys are sick. Man. All right.
Wow.
You're my first friend I know that had a stepdad.
Make fun of him, dude.
Now it's weird if your parents are still together.
Yeah. No shit. But no, it's like a weird thing. Like, his performance, and actually, like Tom Geary was like not like Smalls whatsoever. He was kind of like a. He was into sports.
He was a pretty good athlete, right?
Yeah, like yeah. He I think he was like they said he was like a taekwondo master by the time they filmed this shit.
Jesus.
So it was like damn. But he does portray that like that innocent like wanting to be cool with the new guy with mom's new thing very 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 well. And Karen Allen.
Karen Allen's fantastic. Ugh. And it always reminds me of how great she is.
Oh, so good.
She just seems like such an awesome loving mother.
Mhm. She just passed like maybe 3 or 4 years
really?
Ago.
Oh,
something like that. Yeah. She's so good. Everything that she's in.
R.I.P.
I think I saw Raiders of the Lost Ark before I saw this. Mm. I was like, oh, that's the lady that does all those water shots. Because like, I didn't know that she was shooting like vodka in Raiders of the Lost Ark. Oh, that's that lady. Oh, cool.
Yeah. Why do you drink water in such small cups?
But Dennis Leary was such a weird choice for me as the dad, because I picture him as like the Dennis Leary that we know.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It was only like his second role in a film.
Hmm.
Really?
And so he was just an unknown guy that said, okay, whatever, I'll just play this role. But he played it really well, though, like with the... Some people could argue that maybe he did care, but I just think he just didn't care because he never actually offered any like advice to him on how to play baseball. He just kept saying, eye on the ball, eye on the ball. Like that doesn't, if you're not a natural athletic kid, saying keep your eye on the ball does nothing to teach me how to play baseball. He just offers no teaching and coaching whatsoever.
Well, can we just enact a rule right now that if a kid doesn't know how to throw a baseball, that you drop everything and fucking teach them right then and there how to... throw a fucking ball, like especially I don't know like a male kid, like if he doesn't know how to throw a ball, He's not gonna know how to like kick a ball. He's not gonna know how to like do stuff in recess. He's not gonna know how to like anything.
Okay, but let me at least ask you this. Like, this is a real question because you were an indoor kid, right?
Yeah, I mean, kind of. Yeah.
Okay, so same thing for my band.
For the sake of the bit, yes.
My band member Mason, the singer for the band, is not an athletic person. He said the only reason he's going to run is if he's being chased. Okay. He doesn't run for fun. Never has.
I don't do that.
But like that guy knows how to throw a baseball.
Okay.
I feel like you've seen little kids just like go, oh, okay, you take your arm back and you just throw it. Okay, so it went way over there. Well, next time I'll do it. I just feel like, can you throw a baseball?
Yeah, absolutely. Like for some reason, sports things, I'm just like have a natural. I'm not like good.
Yeah,
but I like know how to do it. You know, like a football or something.
You can throw a baseball, right?
Yeah.
Isn't it sort of a natural thing that it's everyone like, can sort of do?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like this innate sense of things. Like dogs know how to drink water the right way with their tongue. Because that's just how they do it. I think everybody is actually ingrained with like how you actually should throw a baseball. Most people are, and then you have a few people that aren't. Apparently, Smalls is one of them.
That's something I just didn't buy in this movie. Yeah. The fact that he didn't even know how to even just, because when he does that first throw, big props to Tom Geary for figuring out how to make that look so bad.
Yeah,
that's not true. Even like it didn't even go a foot. It just like went into the ground.
Well, yeah, it's like great actors know how to make it look like they don't know how to act or something.
Yeah, so definitely. It's like yeah, that sure.
Same idea. He must. Damn, he's a good actor.
Yeah,
he's like, he must be really great at baseball.
He even did the like he put his throwing foot forward. Yeah. but
just
that
all wrong.
But that leads into the biggest problem I have with the movie logistically. Right.
Okay.
Is like he's single-handedly the worst athlete in the world at this point. Like the way he threw that ball, he knows nothing and is not teachable.
But hey, how about this? Willie Wiggins.
I was just going to bring this up.
He did not know how to play whatsoever. Right. I mean, like,
and they couldn't even teach him.
I mean, obviously, I mean, like they could teach him like the moves, but you know, like you said in the review, they cut
right
to a real guy first. I mean, like there might be those people out there who just don't have it.
So then, to play off of what you just said, if that is indeed true, and this kid has zero athletic ability in his body, all it took was for Benny to say, "Hold your glove in the air," and the most perfect hit of all time. Is it a confidence booster that all of a sudden now he thinks he catches that ball and then throws it like 50 yards?
Yeah.
But then he does tell him to like throw it like he threw a newspaper or whatever, which is like, I get that people don't buy it or
you
whatever.
You should know. Like that's what people's arms do. Like
yeah,
throw
that's
it like
true.
A fucking newspaper.
That's true. Yeah. Like that, if, yeah.
If I'm nitpicking anything, I just hate how everyone hates Smalls. And they can see he's the worst player ever, but then he catches it and throws the ball back, and they all go, oh, okay, he's pretty good.
Yeah.
He's on our team.
Yeah.
Like, no, it doesn't work that way as kids, man.
I've got to say, like, there's a couple of points where he's, like, walking up there, and I had the big problem when he's walking up and, like, talking to himself, don't be a goofus. Don't be a goofus. Don't be a goofus. And you're just like, what the fuck is a goofus? You are a nerd.
You
man.
Are a like, goofus, dude. You can't take that away.
You're not swearing in front of anybody. It's like, but the other thing, though, I think maybe one of the funniest moments is when he decides, like, I can't throw it. I'm just gonna run it on up to the pitcher. Hoops it all the way up there,
what
and there's
God's
like,
name is he doing?
What the fuck is he doing, man?
You know, dude, you're absolutely right. I think of some of the most embarrassing moments in movies where it affects you on a personal level. You go, thank God that's me. I think of Swingers when he makes those voicemail calls.
Oh my
Swingers.
God, dude.
Like it makes my skin crawl.
Heather Graham of all people, isn't it Heather Graham?
Yeah, this was a totally random girl that he met. But this is the same thing. This is the, like, can you imagine the embarrassment of running? And he knows that he's doing the wrong thing by running this ball in, but he's like, here you go.
He's like, this isn't right. Here you go.
But he does it anyway. He totally chose the embarrassment of running the ball in over the embarrassment of trying to throw a ball. He had to make that choice.
He made that conscious decision.
Well, I like when he goes to the baseball game. It's I'm just thinking, like, to me, the 50s, when you didn't have a bike, you sprinted your ass off to wherever you needed to go. Because he's just like, gets out of the house and he's like,
yeah,
like right down the street. He's like, you don't even want to like stop and like look at Like what, store or something like that? No.
You are gone,
just
dude.
Just done. I also really like, the narration says that they didn't even play a game. They just practiced and like threw it to bases, and it was just like an endless game. And I'm just like, an endless dream game is what the narration says. And I'm just like, well, that's kind of childhood right there in a nutshell. You know, like, especially like having a look into this movie, like the biggest pickle we've ever been into. It's a snapshot of this guy's summer that he had. And I'm just like, well, that dream game is just like that dream moment for him too. And I just thought that was really cool. And it was like almost the beginning of the film. I'm like, oh, that kind of wraps it all up for me, honestly.
Yeah.
It's such a cool alternative to how often do you think of like when you're a kid that you're supposed to play competitively, and these guys know that they're a team, right? So instead of them playing, well, let's split up into like 4 and 4 and we'll play this game and we'll see who wins.
Yeah.
Instead, they're like, no, we're a team. We're going to play this, and we're practicing.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they do all day.
And everybody plays the same position every game.
They're all their own position.
Yep.
They have like a lineup.
Yep.
And nothing changes. This is what we do. And they're like, that's why I thought it was actually so great to see them playing against another team.
Yeah. Right.
In the very beginning, you know, they're playing against other kids.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like this experience or whatever. Everyone's out there and watching them and everything. I just thought that was a cool thing. Like, it's an endless practice for them, you know?
And they even said they don't even keep score.
No, they don't keep score. It's just about, like, making sure you get it done.
Yep.
Like, do your job at that role. And that's what we celebrate, you know?
Yeah. And they're running drills and give each other shit. It's so much fun to watch.
Yeah.
The group of kids is we'll get there as we like learn more about them and everything, but they are perfect.
All right, moving along. One day when catcher Ham hits a home run into an adjacent backyard, Smalls attempts to retrieve the ball but is stopped by the other boys because of the beast that lives in the backyard. That night, the boys have a camp out at the nearby treehouse where Squint tells the legend of the beast, a large, aggressive English mastiff that has become a neighborhood legend for his size. Many baseballs hit into the yard over the years have been claimed by the beast, which is kept chained up by its owner, Mr. Myrtle. One particularly hot day, the boys visit the community pool in lieu of baseball. Squints has a crush on lifeguard Wendy Peppercorn and fakes drowning in order to get her to administer mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. After he awakens and kisses her, the Sandlot team is banned from the pool, but Squints' reputation is boosted.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to take us back to the beginning of this as much as we want to talk about the pool scene.
No, definitely.
Okay. It's got to go in order, man.
Yeah. Got to go in order. Because this is like when he goes to try to retrieve the ball, and like this is when you start to see imagination take over, and they really play up the imagination of these kids. And the unknown to them is their imagination, and they've heard these things and hear these things, and they actually haven't ever seen anything, and if they have, they blew it out of proportion in their mind's eye. And that's what, like, in some of those reviews that people are like, there's no dogs this big, and there's no Babe Ruth showing up in dreams, what? And it's like,
well, you had a perfect childhood and were never scared or never had like anything that you wanted to like achieve in your life. You know, like, never dreamed about doing anything bigger than just fucking writing reviews.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, did anybody read my review today on the Sandlot?
Yeah. Well, and the perfect example of this, in fact, is how he's talking and describing Mr. Myrtle. It's a completely different guy.
It is.
Totally.
It works.
And it's so well that they do that.
Yeah, they don't know who he is or what
they
he looks like.
They have no clue what he looks like.
No idea about this human. That exists only in their head to this point.
Well, really. And at some point they even say, like, why don't you just knock on the door to go get it? And they're like, well, you can't do that. Well, he's the meanest guy in the entire world. When it turns out, by the end, they could have just knocked on the door and gotten it.
He's actually, like, their savior tenfold.
Yes. No kidding. I just thought it was such a brilliant point. And then another iconic line. So many iconic lines come out of the camp out.
Yep.
Camp out. So good.
The soundtrack is wonderful in this movie.
It's so fantastic.
It's all great timing. And there's just a few of these awesome lines during the camp out. I love how they're all just in such sync. They practice so much together.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
They know exactly what they're all going to do. Camp out. We got to go do it.
Yep.
Great.
I mean, even if they did see the dog, it would probably like, because I remember seeing an interview with David Mickey Evans's brother. He was saying that the dog that actually bit him looked way bigger, you know, because he's a little kid.
Yes.
And so like this, you gotta put yourself into these kids' shoes and just be like, yeah, that's the way it would be. Because like, obviously, like maybe some kid had seen the beast before, blew it way out of proportions. Like, it's the biggest fucking beast you've ever seen in your entire life. And so that story gets passed down by that kid. That story gets passed down by that kid.
It's telephone, dude.
It's what it is.
It 100% is.
My old neighborhood, I hadn't been there in 10 years, and we went to drive through it, and I'm like, why is everything so small? My best buddy was like six doors down, and it felt like I was walking a mile to get to his house, and we drove it in 0.1 second. Going down the street, you know? It was unbelievable.
I know. It's everything just seems so much bigger when you're that age. Like, you kind of forget about that, you know?
I really, before these scenes started, I really had to say that I like the inclusivity of Benny. Like, I got to mention that he's just kind of a saint of the group. Obviously, everyone looks up to him, and they did in real life, actually, too. All of the group of the cast of kids actually looked up to him, like kind of their leader, pretty much. And, like, when David, the director, would give them direction, he would kind of reiterate to the kids the same direction, and that's kind of cool. But I like how he gives him the hat too, you know.
Yep.
He's like, I got an extra one, just take it.
He already knew Smalls was going to try to make some excuses.
Yeah
Well, and that's the thing, is like, I think he already knew going into that, he had the read on him.
He knew right away
he knew that glove he brought the first time around wasn't worth anything anyways. Like, he could tell. He's like, oh, yeah, I've got an extra glove. Here you go.
Yeah.
And then
the hat, bro.
And then he's like, oh, by the way, that hat, yeah, ditch that. I've got the other hat.
No, he's like, you got a fireplace? You throw it in there.
Burn that thing. You put it in there.
But I've got a thought on that, too. Like, Benny's just so nice and wants to bring everybody together.
Yeah.
But if you think about it in kind of like more of a sad way, like, I think Benny is Small's best friend, but I don't think that Small's is Benny's best friend.
Okay.
Probably, you know, not. Like, Smalls will forever view Benny as like, that's my best friend in the entire world. But Benny's like, I got a lot of friends, man. Like, you know, I'm busy tonight with my other friends. Yeah. Kind of thing, right. You know, so as they grew up, you know, like, Smalls probably thought of him as much more than they really were.
Yeah.
I don't mean to make everybody sad, but.
No, I mean,
it's probably true.
Reality.
I mean, that's what happens when you become a pro MLB player.
And you grow that mustache.
Yeah, damn, dude.
You know, that mustache, I mean. Pretty badass.
Yeah. I like, and I think right outside the like convenience store or something like that, where he first meets the group, jumping back a little bit, I think Porter is actually chewing on bubblegum cigars, which is amazing.
Oh, that's right.
I remember, I can taste it right now, dude.
Oh, so God. Good.
So sugary. The bubblegum cigars.
Oh, yeah.
It was just a big wad of,
but it was
pink
delicious.
Sugar, but you loved it as a kid.
I do love, too, when Smalls gets home, he's writing on a notepad, baseball stuff to remember.
Yeah.
Like, this is how still do. I have a notepad in my phone. It's like things to remember
about Sean and AJ.
Look up heavy metal music.
What's heavy metal? Okay. Oh, I know. No, I know heavy metal.
Get into Refused and act like you know. No, I'm just kidding.
Pretend like you know, you've been listening to this forever.
Yeah.
So the camp out, I've said on the show before, but I love story time in movies, and it's one of the best story times in movies. That like the Konachrome look, the black and white Konachrome fucking thing is so cool, and it's creepy. Yeah,
it is.
And it's so, and I love the performance of the guy who plays
Chief grandfather?
Squidman's Palidorus.
Squidman Palidorus.
He's been in a ton of movies.
Has he really?
Squidman Palidorus. Yeah, he kind of looked familiar, so I just looked up his IMDb, and it just like goes on forever.
Wow.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
He's got to be like a B actor because but like all of his facial really reaction, he looks like Groucho Marx playing in a movie.
He does.
But I love, and it looks like that whole look looks like it was like David Lynch took over for a minute. It was just like, yeah, I'm going to make Eraserhead for a sec. But I love how Ham is just like a bartender with s'mores.
Hey, Sean. Sean.
What's up?
You want s'mores?
What's a s'more what?
S'mores. No, do you want s'mores?
Some more of what?
How could I have s'more if I haven't had anything?
Yeah.
Killing me, Smalls.
Okay, well, let's talk about Patrick Renna because
so good, man.
I think he's the best actor in this entire
100%.
Movie. And it is actually kind of weird. Sandlot was his first role, but he did some things afterwards, but he never like went on to like be a huge star or anything like that. And I just, you can tell he's an absolutely incredible actor. He's just the most believable of all of them. His lines, I mean, like, what's 100%. Your, there's so many iconic lines from Ham Porter. I mean, Killing Me Smalls is an iconic line that everyone knows and says.
It is pop culture definitively now. Like, it is just like when people, when you say, like, kids are going to grow up just knowing how to play or knowing how to throw a ball. They're just going to they're going to grow up knowing that that's a saying.
Killing Me Smalls.
Yeah.
Do you have any other favorite Ham lines of the movie?
I mean, I'm the great Hambino.
Great Hambino.
I just love all of his like shit talking when he's, it's so good. And it's all ad-lib too.
Completely.
Which is even more amazing. And I even read saw an interview with the director. He's like, he was my secret weapon. Like
he knew right away he could turn to Ham.
Yeah, I needed to shoot some more scenes, so I just shot him like talking shit to batters when they were up. You know, it's like so good.
Yeah, because he goes play ball. Come on, batter, we got to get this over. We got a quick game. I got to get home for lunch. Like everything he says.
If I had a dog that was as ugly as you, I'd shave his butt and teach him to walk backwards.
Oh,
strike one.
Two more.
Even getting into the pool scene, which I know we're going to get into. When Squints goes, I've been planning it for years. He goes, you guys, he's been planning it for years. Just so excited running away. I mean, everything Ham Porter does is incredible. And I love Patrick Renna.
When he hits the homer that Smalls goes to try to retrieve.
Yes.
Yeah.
When he goes and does that and he does the point, the iconic point. That's what he's talking about. Yeah.
Doesn't he point? He like points over. He moves his arm all the way from left field to right field.
Not sure where it's going to go, but
it's going. And so he gets out there, and when he smacks that thing, and he's just like,
he's still like, reveling in his home run.
Oh, no, he hit me with the heater. low and inside, just like I like it.
He's just so fucking good in that movie.
He's just getting pummeled with hats and gloves. It's just like they're so pissed, but he's just like, that's what you get.
You're right. He's the most natural performance of the entire thing. And that's, it's why it's so iconic. Like it will never get old.
No.
That's why this movie, I mean, like as old as baseball, it's
true.
This movie's going to last as long as that as well.
And baseball has been around forever.
Long time.
Forever.
That speaking of that, that whole like rush, like when they're like go take a look for yourself, man, and the whole rush up camera like to Smalls, and he's like, he's out there, he's down there. That scared the fuck out of me when I was a kid, dude.
Yeah. Well, and then you got Squints looking like a badass, just like, you bet he is.
He's holding the bat.
And then
the smallest guy in the group.
Yeah. And then you got Ham. It's just like, whatever goes over that fence stays there. And it's just like, they're just building it up. Like every story that they tell each other, it gets worse and worse. Mm-hmm. That dog gets bigger and bigger. And the, you know, it's so funny. It's so funny.
It's
they
so
have
good.
Entire campouts dedicated to telling this new guy about it.
Before we get to the pool scene, I have to say that this is like a movie doesn't have the structure often whatsoever. And so we set up our main character who we think is Smalls, right? And his kind of dilemma, the biggest pickle he's ever been in. But then we get to the cast of characters and the group that's going to show him around and everything. And the movie takes a detour and gives us like several iconic chunks of a movie, like scenes, like now we're going to get to the pool scene and then there's the next scene. Where it's not really in the focus of
Smalls
at all.
Smalls is barely recognizable in some of these scenes.
Right. He's like kind of a background character in some things. And so it's such a weird departure
that's
for a movie
true.
To like especially a kid's movie to do this. But that's why I think it falls in the art film kind of category. Why the title The Boys of Summer would have been just like the perfect title.
B-O-I-S.
There you go.
Yeah.
of course.
Because they're super cool. But it's really interesting to me, and I find the structure of this movie so fascinating, and that's why it like sticks around, because it's like little, right now we get to like little vignettes of story just to build character for the whole group.
It really is.
But it works so well, and it shouldn't at all.
And it's quick. You couldn't remake this. Like in that, you couldn't say, man, let's take this same concept and let's do it around basketball.
Yeah.
It just wouldn't work.
I don't know.
Like you say, the scene leading directly to the pool scene, you have Squints and Yaya picking up a ball from Vincent's drug.
Yep.
And they're running down there. They run into Wendy Peppercorn. And he's like, come on, come on. And he's so dedicated to just watching her walk away. But they get there, and Ham is just like, this pop isn't helping. It's 110 degrees out. It's too hot for baseball. And that's one of those scenes when they're all sitting on the dugout. I couldn't pick Smalls out of that lineup.
No, it's like he's a part of the group now.
He's just one of the
guys.
And
now the movie is about the group.
Yes.
Exactly. You know?
Yes. I think that's what's great about it. Yes, it is his baseball that we're eventually going to be seeking out, but it's because of it's this group that's going to do it.
The group
together.
Is one entity right. now. Yeah. At
later,
this point.
Later on, he becomes the catalyst for everything
right.
again. But like for like, I think it's three sequences. Yeah. It's just the group, and it's so fucking good.
Yeah.
I'm not like you guys, where you guys like to put on closed captions when you rewatch.
Okay.
I am so anti that because I'm just like, I can't. I have to read it instead of watching what's happening. But there was one moment where I watched it. I said, wait, what? What did they say?
I think I know what you're talking
and
about.
I went back and I rewound and I put the closed caption on. It took me like three times to get back to where I wanted. And yeah. Scam and pool honeys. Yeah. What? They go like, let's go
Squints
to the pool.
Was perving a dish.
They say scam pool honeys? Like, that's what they said?
Scam. I think it's scan. Pool honeys, but maybe
the closed captioning says scam.
It says scam. I know.
It's got to be scam, right?
Yeah, that's. I had to assume.
Like, what are they? Who are they scamming?
But then again, you got to think back to the '60s. What does anybody scan back in the '60s? I guess, you know.
Sure.
I just thought it was hilarious.
But
I had no clue they said that.
Yeah, I didn't either. They. I just thought it was. I don't even know what I thought it was back in the day.
Like his voice is so perfect to the high. How are you?
Another great Ham moment. Hey. Like, quite literally the most Ham moment of the movie. He's walking out. Hey. Oh, sexy. Oh. Ooh, I remember you.
I remember you.
And like, that's ad lib. There's no way.
Dude, all of his lines seem ad lib. That's why it's so good.
But are those the best actors? The ones where it just feels like they just said that?
Yeah.
I remember just losing my shit as a kid when he did the slow turn. And he does a kiss and wave.
And his voice cracks when he says it. It's perfect.
It's so wonderful, man. It's so great. And then he splashes them all, makes them all get up. But then they're just, again, it's just boys being boys in the pool. Just throwing each other around and just trying to cool off.
Yep, yep.
So right before this, and we'll get into it like right away too, but like you mentioned briefly the first inkling of Wendy Peppercorn just walking, and I just have to say, there goes my baby. Perfect fucking song for that. Wendy Peppercorn, the reason I went through puberty, the reason I'm a heterosexual, the reason for living, honestly. I mean, I think it's like literally my first crush that I've ever had.
Probably.
Besides
right.
Julia Roberts, because I was just like, and I thought I was going to marry Julia Roberts.
Oh.
You still
might.
Yeah.
But Wendy Peppercorn, played by Marley Shelton. The only other thing I've ever seen her in is Grindhouse with Robert Rodriguez and Quentin Tarantino. She was the nurse in that who like had like the anesthetic things and still looked fucking so good. I mean, she was like, I think, 18 when she made this movie. Okay. And like when it was released, she just turned 19.
It was her second role, and she's done a ton of stuff, but it was mostly like, you know, BC level stuff. She was in Pleasantville, if you remember that.
Yeah.
She was in Bubble Boy.
That's right. Yeah. Yes.
So she, if you look at her, Sin City, Death Proof, W. So she's been in things, but I just don't think she ever like made a big time role out of it. But yeah, she was fantastic in the movie.
100%.
It's that look she gives, man. To the boys, to Squints.
She knows what she's doing.
She knows what she's doing.
Isn't that a line in the movie? She knows what she's doing.
She knows what she's
doing. No, she don't know what she's doing. Yes, she does.
She knows exactly what she's doing. That's a callback to a different movie or something.
It is, yeah.
It was a callback to to a Western, Cool Hand Luke.
Oh, okay.
And that's what it is.
I couldn't remember it.
Yes, Cool Hand Luke. But like, it's like some sort of like reference to that. It's same idea. It's just, she knows exactly what she doesn't know what she's doing. Oh, she knows exactly what she's doing.
What we have here is failure to communicate. That's what that's from.
Cool Hand Luke. Okay.
Yeah. Guns N' Roses album. You know, that's the soundtrack.
Right? Anyway, okay. So yeah, Cool Hand Luke. Cool. Paul Newman is a really good movie. Yeah.
Well, I think, Sean, I'm guessing me and you have seen that. There's a really good documentary on YouTube that kind of centers around a reunion that they did for the cast members, like 30 year anniversary.
It's 25.
Or 25. Yeah. But there's a lot of cool background stuff you get. They talk to Wendy Peppercorns, the actress, and she says that the biggest thing she regrets is the way she dove off the platform.
Yeah, yeah.
Because she's like, I had one try at this because once I got wet, I was wet.
Yep.
And she's just like, I hate the way I dove off that platform. And you go back and watch it. It's pretty piss poor dive for a lifeguard. I don't believe
her knees come in a little bit. Yeah.
I just don't believe she was a real lifeguard.
It's a little awkward. You know?
I'm going to write a review about it.
Yeah, I'm going to write a review on IMDb.
I don't believe that.
I can't. Nope. There's no way she was a lifeguard.
There's so many unbelievable parts. Babe Ruth, the dog didn't be that big. Wendy Peppercorn's dive. I just think
I scanned so many ladies when I was at the pool, and I don't remember a lifeguard ever diving off the board like that. Pushes up my glasses.
I'll tell you what. I think it's pretty redeeming, though, when she pulls Squints out of there. Back up, back up. I got it.
She does really good.
She takes command.
Yeah.
And this is my kid.
That's right. This is my kiss. I mean, mouth to mouth.
I mean,
CPR.
So, yeah. I mean, like, what are we going to say here? Because we did blank check.
Right.
I will start off by saying that leading up to this moment, he was asking about this kiss for, like, weeks on set.
Yes.
He's like, when are we going to do the kiss? When are we going to do the kiss? And when it finally came to it, the director was like, okay, we're going to do it. You're not going to purse your lips whatsoever. And if you stick your tongue in your mouth, you're fucking done.
Yeah.
Like, he was really adamant about, like, if there's any tongue, you're fucking done.
The one
dude.
Thing, keep your fucking tongue in your mouth. Yeah.
I don't think you can compare it to Blank Check. Because
I don't think so
either. This is a different scenario. She is attempting to save his life. This was the kid's doing. She was not purposely... Like, I'm
however
make
pervy,
out with you.
Yes, but
it's super pervy. Yeah. But like, she was, if that kid were dying, she would be expected to do that.
It was against her will by the time it became a kiss. Okay, this is the important thing about consent, guys. There's a point where it's where there is, and then there's no consent. I'm consenting to put my mouth on your mouth to bring you back to life, to resuscitate life. And then,
that's the purpose of that.
And then when the drifters come on, no longer consent.
Not whatsoever.
That's what happened.
And it is marked by that moment.
Yes.
And there wasn't, like, Wendy didn't go through the fence, like they were both on one side of the fence. She's like, so, what, 7 years, six years?
Yeah, no.
There was none of that.
In fact, I'm pretty sure, like, even if, like, someone is dying and needs mouth-to-mouth resuscitation, and this magic moment is playing, you legally can't do it because it's romantic at that point.
Right. The look she gives and the wave, like I say, that's what makes you fall in love with Wendy Peppercorn.
100%.
However, there may have been eyes about, like, hey, I don't like what you did, but I respect it.
Yep.
Okay, dude? But never again until you grow up and then we buy Vincent's Drugstore.
Yeah. Which Vincent's Drugstore was actually featured in Halloween 4, which...
and 5.
With, what's his name, who was in Days of Confused, our favorite character, Don. Sasha Jensen.
Jensen.
He was in Halloween 4, so...
All right.
Okay, carry on, bye.
That's why I knew you loved this movie, buddy.
No.
Well, let's move it along, shall we?
Yes.
So on the 4th of July, the team plays a night game by the light of the fireworks, and Smalls observes that although to the rest of them baseball is just a game, it is Benny's true passion. Later, they are challenged to play against a rival Little League team whom they handily defeat. To celebrate, they visit a fair where they try chewing tobacco obtained by Bertram and ride some rides. The combination has disastrous results. Let's go 4th of July, Sean.
This is what makes this movie a masterpiece.
Why is it so good?
It was filmed at Magic Hour.
Yep.
Which is, you get maybe a half hour to 45 minutes of. So it should be just called Magic 45 Minutes. But
I will spit my beer out. Wow.
I don't know, man. It does. I don't know if you guys have ever been to a block party either.
Yes.
I've been to one in my entire life, and it reminded me so much of that. I don't even know if it was on 4th of July or not, but... The fact that it was
Ray Charles,
Ray Charles, America the Beautiful.
Yeah. Jesus.
Perfect fucking song, and forever, forever in the zeitgeist of like the most American songs. Yeah. And when you said in the beginning of this, this is one of the most American movies ever made, this embodies it so much. This is what I think of when I think of the 4th of July. Yeah. Because I, as a kid, fireworks are so miraculous.
Yes.
They stop playing their favorite sport just to fucking gaze at the fireworks, you know?
Yeah.
And the film takes its time to slow-mo around their faces how in awe they are.
Yeah.
And it's that's childhood, man. Like you stop and think about, like, honestly, you're not even thinking about your childhood at that point. You're just thinking about the moment. And that's what this movie kind of encapsulates in this scene, is that it's all about moments. And now as an adult, obviously, we've said, like, with multiple movies that we've gone through, it's just like we have so much to fucking do, and it's only the future, you know.
Yes.
as a kid, it's just these moments. You're in the moment 100%, and it's one of my favorite scenes of all time.
There's those movies that make you want that in your life moving forward. Like, I would give anything if my 4th of July felt that way.
Yeah.
This year.
No kidding.
You know, like, you strive for that. You want it to be that way. And it's just such, even for me, it wasn't necessarily even the fireworks. It was just that vibe of their block party.
Exactly.
And running past those sparklers. And there were other little kids, like, doing things, but the big kids were off to go do their thing.
The adults were, like, kind of, like, giving food to people and
yeah.
stuff and grilling
such
and shit.
Such a cool, cool moment. Like, yeah. What a vibe. Best 4th of July scene in any movie.
Ever.
100.
Ever. I actually think it's one of my top five scenes ever put to film.
Yeah.
I love it.
All I want to reiterate in that is the Ray Charles version of that song.
So good.
It's just this free form vibe of a. Now, wait a minute. And he's mm-hmm. just bringing it around. And I don't know.
They couldn't have picked a better song.
I want a fireworks display dedicated with that music in the background.
Yeah, man.
That's all I want every year.
I don't
want
to hear
I
don't want to hear Born in the USA.
No.
I don't want to hear Put a Boot in Your Ass. Yeah. Like, I want to hear Ray fucking Charles.
I don't want any Copperhead Road. I want goddamn Ray Charles.
No flats of the rascals.
No rascally flats and Brian Lukes.
Brian Lukes. Puke Brian. Sorry if anybody likes him. We're very open-minded to music, okay?
Duke
guys?
Ryan.
Anita Richard might be mad.
So we can no longer speak about 4th of July scene. We've said what has to be said.
It's one of the best scenes ever.
We move on to the Little League baseball game where they play the rival Little League team.
Shut your mouth, Phillips. My favorite line of the
entire
movie.
What is your favorite back and like? What's your favorite line that is said back and forth?
You pee drinking crap face.
That is mine.
That's it.
He's pee drinking crap
so
face.
So good.
I've
the
actually
way it's delivered.
I've brought that back into my life since I've rewatched it. Like, I'm going to start calling people that because
yeah.
it is a thing.
I think it's one of the best like things you could call like your enemy. It's just like
yeah.
or like somebody you have like absolute disdain for. You're a pee drinking crap face.
And even the way he delivers that, he is intently saying that to this kid and looking right in his
yeah.
eyeballs.
Yeah.
You even kind of talked about it. The director was just feeding them lines.
Yeah.
They were like, okay, you got one? Tell him pee drinking crap face. Yeah, pee drinking crap face. And then they would say it a couple of times. I mean, that's incredible to just stand there and go back and forth that way.
It's so good. And the kid that plays Phillips too is such a like he's a good actor.
Yes,
yeah.
yes.
Like, that's a good performance. Like you're like, yeah, I automatically hate this dude. I don't
totally.
Yeah, fuck Phillips, you know.
We said that in Days Confused. If we hate you as an actor,
yeah.
like as a character, you're a damn good actor.
You're doing good.
Yes.
Doing totally. Really good.
I love it because it's like this equivalent of like the biker gang rolling up
to Booker T and yeah. the MGs. Green yeah. Onions
Green
is
onions.
So perfect for that song.
Yeah. Oh, God. A gun. It's just iconic, man.
Yeah.
I hear that song. I immediately think of this scene. And I think of their shoes coming up, that shot of their
oh,
shoes.
Oh, yeah, man.
And like them kicking up to the. Yeah. And I'm just like, oh, man. Yeah, it's about to be. Face off. It's great, man. I love it.
And even the way Porter sees them and throws his stuff down
yeah,
and starts
dude.
Walking right
He's
towards them.
He's automatically fucking pissed.
Stay back, boys. I got this.
They're like, what? What? Oh, no. Okay. Yeah.
So then, obviously, I think one of the most memorable scenes of the movie is when they celebrate their victory.
Yes.
And they go to the carnival and they, what is it? It's Bertram.
Bertram.
Oh, I forgot, guys.
Chaw.
Oh, man. You know he didn't forget. He was just waiting for his opportunity.
He's waiting
to take
for the perfect moment. You don't feel a big bag of chaw in your back pocket?
It's like, it looks like a freaking big bag of coffee he's got or something. It's just like,
I'm guessing that's how it came back in the day.
I like the shot, too. Like, he pushes it into the camera, and it's kind of out of focus until he puts it in the camera. It's like a...
The good stuff.
The best.
The best. That's what it is.
Did you guys ever chew?
No.
I've never tried it. I smoked for a while, but the beef jerky shit I did.
Well, totally different. Okay?
I ate the beef jerky, and I bought it in actual tubes, not cans. Yeah. You know.
But I've had a moment rewatching this that I'm pretty sure this movie made me say no to chewing tobacco for the rest of my
life.
I think so.
Because like it did kind of a cool job to be like, it's pretty fun.
Yeah.
No, it's not.
Oh, it turns out
you don't want this.
Because then you go on the Lady Luck. Mm-hmm. And you ruin yourself, and you throw up on girls, and makes girls not like you.
Yeah.
So you don't want that.
You don't want that in your life.
Yeah.
Apparently that the chew itself was made out of beef jerky and licorice.
I'll tell you this. If that's what the beef jerky was made out of, the vomit was made out of like split pea soup, oatmeal. Like just a bunch of weird looking shit.
Didn't they have a little cannon that it was shooting out
of?
Yeah.
Like some sort of like squirt cannon thing. And they like actually hit like people.
Random people that didn't know what was happening.
But if that's what they got on film, then that's probably the best reactions they got.
I say their fucking faces when it changes, when they're like having a great time, just like being men, you know, we just had victory, you know. And then once it hits them, their faces are so good.
And it's the best one is probably like Bertram, because he's just like a sick dog in the sitting in that seat, just like, it's like a chihuahua or something, man, just getting thrown around. They all just look miserable, but they're also satisfied at the beginning of it. They're also like, they're proud of themselves. Like, yeah, I'm chewing and being a tough guy. And then it just turns on them.
Especially him is like hamming it up. He's like got his arm on an invisible lady, you know?
It's a perfect description of like the rapid deterioration of a hard night of drinking. How you feel so damn good at first. And
you
then
hit that wall.
Oops, you went too far. Oh, no, you went too far. And you can't go back from that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Cool. So moving along to scene 4. One day, Benny hits the team's only baseball so hard that he knocks the cover off of it, an omen. With Bill away on business for the week, Smalls borrows a baseball from his trophy room that is autographed by Babe Ruth. Being ignorant of baseball history, Small does not realize the ball's value and hits his first home run, sending it over into the beast's yard. When the other boys learn of the autograph, they tell Smalls its value and they try to come up with a way to retrieve it. They make several attempts to get the ball out of the yard using makeshift retrieval devices, but each is destroyed by the beast.
So now we get back to like the plot as regular scheduled.
Right. We had a fun summer. Everything's going great.
Yeah, so they set up the beast and everything like that, and they set up all of these characters, and now you're fucking in love. Now you feel like a part of this cast, you know? And so now it's kind of takes its... Once that ball's over the fence, it's like it's back to Smalls' movie, kind of,
sort of.
Yeah,
he's a catalyst in making this move along. The one thing I didn't like, and maybe this is just how nice Benny is, right? Benny was so utterly devastated when he broke that ball, and now we can't play no more, and it's all because of me.
I've never seen that happen before.
Omen. But then they get a ball, and two pitches later, that ball's gone, and they're like, "Yeah, Smalls, this is so great. Why are you mad? Yeah. Why are you mad, Smalls? This is awesome."
Yeah, it's like, he's like, "Dude, maybe the shock of his first homer is just too much."
Honestly, I think the only flaw of this movie is that he's been hanging out with these goons for so long now. Like, I don't know how many. Like, maybe a month.
School would have just got out. We're past the 4th of July. Yeah. We're like maybe 2 months.
Okay, yeah. Maybe. So he's been hanging out with them pretty much consistently every day. I would say still doesn't know who Babe Ruth is.
Yeah.
Is the only flaw.
Why didn't he Google it when he got home?
Exactly, dude. Kidding, that's what I'm saying.
He wrote it on his stupid little paper, learn about baseball stuff.
Yeah.
Then you just plug it into your notepad on your phone?
Yeah.
Idiot. That's all you have to do.
God. He could have asked Siri and Alexa when he got home.
Why didn't you just ask Jeeves? I think that was still a thing back
even,
then.
You didn't even need friends when you had Siri and Alexa.
Didn't like MySpace? Wasn't that a thing back then?
Pretty sure. No, actually, Google back then, it did exist, but you had to write away for it. So you had to put all your questions at the end of the month in an envelope and send it off to Google, and then they send
you
back
got, you got a letter
answers.
From Gary Google?
Yeah. Gary Google. And his,
it just says all the thesauruses.
It's his son, Gary Google Jr., that's heading it up now.
The Smalls is a total nerd. He could have gone to the library.
Yeah.
He could have. This could have been an opening for him with Bill to be like, Bill, teach me more about baseball and stuff like that and tell me why this ball is so important.
But why is that a thing?
But nope, he didn't want to do it.
No, I guess not.
I think from here on out too, it really shows you kind of how good Tom Geary was. I thought he was a very solid actor as Smalls.
I do too.
Especially because of what you just said, where he was not a nerdy kid, and he was able to transform himself into like, that takes, think about, you're a 12-year-old kid and you have to swallow your pride of like, no, I'm actually a really cool, likable kid who's very good at athletic stuff, but now I have to pretend like I'm not. And I thought he did a really good job throughout this movie, and especially, no, you don't understand, that's my dad's ball. Like, he does a very good job of some lady, baby Ruth.
Babe Ruth.
And that's the first time probably that they all actually consider jumping that fence.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
They were like, don't even go to the window. But now they're all jumping over that fence and poking their head over.
Yeah.
I would have done anything, probably. Yeah. I would have straight up gone to the front door and be like, I don't care. Like, I need to get this ball back. You know? Also, Mr. Myrtle's backyard, the American Picker's dream. Can you just imagine them going back there?
How much you want for that?
Exactly. I'll give you 50.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. 50 seems like retail.
56. Yeah. You're sold.
Is that a letter, Kenny? The dicker? You got a dicker.
You got a dicker. Yeah. It's like, I know we want the obvious solution. It's like, you can't. He's the meanest old man like in town. And just like, just again, just blown it out of proportion. And I know we're not quite there yet. I can't wait till we get to the Erector set, I guess. But what's the first one they do?
I think the first one is like not the vacuum.
It's just a pole. It's like a pole. They just take a pole.
Yeah,
out
he's
of
just
there.
He's just okay. Okay, he's getting this. And it's just like they're feeding this like long stick through, and it's like, okay, there it is. There it is. And then they're poking at it. And then, again, their imagination, this massive bear paw slams down and, and they're just wide-eyed, just like, it's just obnoxious. And it gets, like, he yanks it back through. It looks like a broom on the other side. Like, it's all perfectly just, like, shamble, like, split. And with drool, I imagine, on it or something. And
I can say from experience that's accurate too. Mastiffs, their drool is viscous as fuck.
Yes.
And it looks just like that. I'm sure they use like some sort of concoction of KY shit, but it's like, if you get mastiff drool on you, you feel like you have it on you the rest of the day.
Yeah.
The rest of your life.
Almost.
And then
if you're lucky enough.
After that, they got a little bit better, and they put like a bucket thing or kind of a dish thing on the other side of it.
And they were going to pull it back.
Pull it back. Oh, I got it. I got it.
I love how optimistic Squints is, because he's the lookout. Yeah. He's like...
He's the smallest guy.
Yeah, he's got the binoculars or whatever the lookout thing is he's using. But he's like, you got it. Pull it up.
That's my wife's favorite line of the movie. You got it. Pull it up.
Pull it up.
Like, we did it.
You did it.
Look how easy that was. But it is kind of funny, because Timmy goes, we've been going about this all wrong. And he's like, we need to do an airborne attack, but they were all kind of airborne attacks. Like the suction thing was an airborne attack, and now let's just put a live human being on it instead. That'll be different.
Yeah.
It was kind of weird.
Yeah. Well, the vacuum one, like, it's just all goes wrong.
Yes.
That's like the pinnacle of just everything going wrong. The vacuum. Initiate suction number two. Initiating suction number two. It's just like, you got it. Pull it up. This is like showing again, like, a lot of these guys have their little moment. We've already talked about a lot of them. And this is Timmy's
moment.
And I thought it was Smalls for the longest time beforehand. And then he just shakes his head off. He's like, we've been going about this all wrong.
It's one of my favorite.
I blame myself.
It's one of my favorite, like, sequences from one of these actors. I think that whole performance that he has while he's covered in all that vacuum dust is somehow like the best monologue of the film.
Yeah.
To me, like it just seems so genuine. He's
so
like
sincere.
Yeah. It's just like, well, he just went through an explosion, you know, and everyone's just kind of shocked that he comes out and he looks like a ghost, you know? I don't know. There's something about it. I'm just like, it's so natural.
He's defeated yet still determined.
Yeah.
And they're going through all this shit. And like, they're jumping off the treehouse. They're like just doing everything they can to get out. And it's so good. And then we get to the erector set, right?
It was the baseball glove suction, and then it was the erector set, and then they dropped in. Yeah, yeah.
And then they drop in. Yep. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
And that was after he goes, "We've been going about this all wrong.
Yeah,
we need an airborne attack. Yeah.
Airborne attack.
Even though a couple of them were airborne attacks, no big deal.
They were.
Down catapult.
Down catapult. Close catapult.
For some reason, I always was questioning why. When he was up in the air. And in that documentary, I learned that he's like, I saw like Bugs Bunny do that on like some bits, and I did it just randomly, and David the director liked it, so he kept it.
Oh, God,
like, okay,
great.
Good. I guess.
Thank God that wasn't written in the script, bro.
Oh, man.
So just as all hope seems lost, Benny has a dream in which the spirit of Babe Ruth advises him to use his speed and skills to retrieve the ball himself. Benny goes over the fence to retrieve the ball, but the dog breaks its chain and leaps over the fence in pursuit. It chases Benny through town and eventually back to the sandlot. Benny jumps back into Mr. Myrtle's yard, but the beast crashes through the fence, which falls down on top of it. Smalls and Benny lift the fence to free the dog, who shows gratitude by licking Smalls and leading them to the stash of baseballs. They meet Mr. Myrtle, who turns out to be a former baseball player. He kindly trains them the chewed-up ball for one autographed by all of the 1927 New York Yankees and asks Smalls and Benny to visit him weekly to talk more about baseball. Smalls gives this ball to Bill, and their father and son relationship improves. Benny earns his nickname the Jet, and he goes on to play for the Los Angeles Dodgers.
Woo!
So you said you did have a Mastiff growing up?
I did, yeah. His name was Chuck, and yeah, they're fucking great dogs.
Huge.
Very, very slobbery and huge, and much like the one in this movie is like just huge. And so the thing, especially if you're going through puberty and you have one, the thing you got to watch out for is that tail, my boy.
Wow.
And they get excited, and that thing fucking whips you in the balls. You're down for the count, obviously. And they get excited a lot, you know, that's all I'm saying. But lovely, lovely dogs. Very good guard dogs, and R.I.P. Chuck, because it reminded me a bunch of him when I watched this movie.
Yeah. My buddy Dilly had a Great Dane.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, much similar in size. And we used to play a game where we would jump on the trampoline and we'd do these fun things. And if you lost whatever the game was, you had to run from the trampoline to the other end of the yard to try to jump over the fence before the Great Dane Noah would chase you. And he just thought it was fun, right? And you'd turn around, just like Benny would in this movie. You would turn around, and that dog is just going,
oh,
nipping at your feet. And if you didn't make it to the fence, he would tackle you and then kiss you in the face. You know, and it brought back a ton of memories of just how big those dogs were, especially when you were a younger kid, right?
Yeah.
And having them chase you. And Benny's all in it, man. He probably ran, 10 miles through that town?
Oh, yeah.
When he got that ball?
Exhausted, like by the end of it all.
Yeah.
Like he does. He looks exhausted. I remember as a kid watching it happen, and he does it, and they do that little bit of a more or less the standoff.
Yeah.
And he runs. PF Flyers. It's like
a
shoe guaranteed to make a kid run faster and jump higher. It's just like,
I'm not gonna lie. I looked up a pair last night. I'm like, can I still buy these?
You
I
can.
Kinda want a pair of these.
They've come back, and I remember selling them for a while when I worked at a shoe store. And I always thought about it. They are like a way more comfortable Taylor shoe. Really are. That's literally what they are.
Damn.
But I remember when he does that, and he gets the ball. And he jumps the fence back over, and they're all cheering and everything. And then you hear the laugh, that
wipe out.
And I remember as a kid, my pelvic floor just dropping out from below me, and just be like, oh shit, oh no,
you're dead,
you're gonna get it, oh. And yeah, this then ensues the wipeout scene of this chase that is just epic.
It's so good.
Yeah.
And I got to say, real quick before this, the dream sequence of Babe Ruth, Art LaFleur as Babe Ruth, yeah. Perfect casting.
He perfect.
Looks exactly like Babe Ruth. But it's cool because most of the advice the kids get from people is either them learning it themselves or from dreams with legends, apparently. Like a kid, they do what their idols might do. Mm-hmm. And so he has this dream and really is just like no real adult is telling him this. And I like movies like this where it's just like there's little to no adults involved yeah. anywhere. And so what he learns from this is that he has in a dream from his favorite baseball player of all time, you know. And so he gets the bravery that way. And I think that's such a kid moment. Cause like, I don't know, like liking Quentin Tarantino, like, yeah, go make movies, dude. Just do it.
Do what your idol
yeah.
says.
Yeah.
Not cause your parents told you to.
I didn't go to film school. I just watched movies. So I'm yeah. just watch movies, you know?
There's a cool thing that in the dream that I didn't know as a kid too. Babe Ruth says, I don't know why, but can I have this?
Yeah, yeah.
And he's holding a Hank Aaron, baseball card, yeah. which of course, if you're a baseball fan, Hank Aaron goes on to break Babe Ruth's all time record. So you can tell the director's clearly a baseball yeah. fan, and he wants to put that stuff in there.
Definitely.
Which is super cool.
It was really cool.
Yeah.
Did that cake look at all good to you when you guys?
No.
Okay.
No, well, the cake looked good, but I didn't want to eat it because of the guys who made it.
Okay? Made with their own sweat and blood.
Yeah, and that's what I imagine is in like the fucking food coloring Ugh. For the frosting. And they're just like, oh, oh, oh. Like it's some sort of like three Stooges side characters. Oh, the cake that we got to jump over. And oh, they're throwing pies around it. And then they sit down. They're like, oh. And then...
It's like Laurel and Hardy.
It totally
yeah,
is.
It's just like, okay. And then it all drops on him, and you're just like, yeah, now I really don't want it.
Ew, I was going to eat that.
I was going to try it at least.
The whole, I love the Wolfman in the theater, but like, why is anybody in a theater watching the Wolfman like with just like fold out chairs?
In a school
yeah.
gym.
It seemed like, yeah, it seemed like a community movie yeah. like a free movie night, you know.
Yeah, come down watch the Wolfman.
Yeah. We're airing Wolfman. Oh, that's the new one, right?
Even when they finally meet James Earl Jones, who I just love James Earl Jones, uh-huh. and to find out that he's actually like he comes out, he's so mean, and oh, he's gonna be so mean. Oh, yeah. Why didn't you just ring the doorbell? Could have got it for you.
God,
and then come on inside.
Why didn't you yeah. just knock on the door? I'd have gotten it for you.
Even the way he describes like his smile when he talks about yeah. baseball and how great it is. And he knows, he's like, this is an important ball, isn't it?
Yeah,
like, he
yeah.
just knows
he
that for
it,
some reason.
It.
Yeah, he's like, it's so cool. And funny thing about James Earl Jones, he obviously went on to do Field of Dreams, too,
yeah.
another mm-hmm. iconic baseball movie.
Yeah.
But he has said that he actually hates baseball.
He hates baseball.
He doesn't like baseball at all.
Yeah.
That's so
pretty,
weird.
It's pretty awesome. Yeah. But he portrays it very, again, very good actor, because I think James Earl Jones loves baseball.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
I think. I believed it so much and get goosebumps every single time he says, baseball was life. That's the way I played. And like,
and I was good at it.
And
you
I was
knew,
good
you
at
knew
it,
Babe
you
Ruth? Know? Who, George?
George?
that's so good.
I read that the kids were actually like very intimidated by Dennis Leary. But they were very intimidated by James Earl Jones because
yeah.
he's the voice of Darth Vader.
Oh.
And at that point, those kids would have been like fucking all on fire for Star Wars, you know?
Yeah.
And so I can imagine like when I assume some of the crew members told
said,
them.
Said, hey, do it. Do the Darth Vader
well,
voice.
That I assume some of the crew members told the kids that he is Darth Vader voice, you know? And so they're probably like, oh, shit, what?
No, he can't be.
And so, I mean, like them being kind of stoic and kind of scared of him, it's probably somewhat real.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I always wondered, I'm like, man, they really got a guy that looked like Benny at the end there.
Yeah.
It was actually his real brother.
Yeah.
Was it really?
Pablo Vitar was Mike Vitar's brother, and he played Benny at the end of the movie with that amazing thumbs up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, what a thumbs up. Like, damn.
Yeah.
It was
like,
good.
As a kid, I'm like, is that a real baseball player? Because it looks like it could be.
Yeah.
Still today, honestly.
Totally, right? And how cheesy was it that he had that fucking hat on?
The hat
yeah.
back. The hat was back.
Oh, man, I didn't like that.
He grew into it, I suppose.
Didn't look as big and dumb, did it?
Yeah, didn't look quite as stupid.
Apparently didn't listen to his best friend Benny and
no.
burn it in the fireplace.
Yeah, exactly.
I liked when he finally gives the ball back to Dennis Leary, his stepdad. I just thought to myself, the narration was like, he grounded me for a week, and And I was just thinking to myself, like, you know, I have to kill you now, right? You're done.
You know who I am, right?
You're no longer.
Dennis Leary.
Yeah.
I'm an asshole. I'm going to literally light you on fire.
It's
going to
become another cool drama with starring Dennis Leary and Karen Allen.
Yeah.
Without you now, kid.
Right. They're going to be on the run in the 60s from, yeah, doing this there
from
kid.
Child Messiah.
Yeah.
Child Messiah.
Oh, man.
Bertram got really into the 60s, and no one ever saw him again.
No one ever really saw him again.
So you want to get into, like, what happened to them right now?
Whatever you want, man.
We can do that.
We're at the end here.
I mean,
I imagine him with, like, really long hair, like Slater hair, yeah. But also, like, really crummy facial hair, and he's just, like, and his glasses that he's probably had to tape up a couple of times by now. And, like, that's what he's doing.
Bertram OD'd and died for sure. OD'd. For sure.
OD'd on LSD.
Yes, he is done. Bertram's no longer.
He's still tripping over the...
yeah. He's reliving the same summer over and over again. I think it's such a, like, I think it's why it reminds me of Stand By Me, is I think Stand By Me does, like, the whole, yeah, this is what they went on to do and stuff like that. And that's what I love about it, is I'm just like, because some of it's dark, like, especially Bertram's and stuff like that. And then some of it's, like, outrageous, like Squints, you know. He married Wendy Peppercorn and they had 9 kids.
Yeah. They have 9 kids.
They own Vince's Drugstore to this day. You know, it's like, it's so cool, though. What do you guys think about the whole...
I love it.
Yeah.
I'm always a huge fan of that. Yeah. We've talked about that in a previous episode, I think, of where we want that if they don't give it to us sometimes.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think they did such a good job, and you get to see them playing their position, and as they do, they disappear. Or
yeah,
Timmy and Tommy grew up designing prefab tree houses, and now they make mini malls.
Like, a thing called mini malls.
Yeah. Like, there's a bunch of them that it's like, it kind of warms you up to know that they, like, most of them went on to do some good things, and then you hear Smalls is the last one to move away. He said, which always confused me, because I was like, but it's Benny who's running the bases. That was what always confused me at the end of this movie. I was like,
true.
Wait a second, that's Benny.
Benny.
So it's been Benny. Big twist. We've been listening to Benny the whole time. No.
Oh yeah, they're the same person. It's a Tyler Durden twist.
Oh.
Fan theory.
Hell.
Well, what do you think? Should we wrap it up with some modern day ratings?
I think so.
Gap it.
AJ, I'm going to let you go first.
I'm going to tell you right now, I enjoy this movie just as much as when I watched it originally. So I'm actually not going to shift on this at all.
Nice.
I'm an 8.5, man. I love watching this movie. So this is the summer equivalent to me for A Christmas Story.
Yeah.
That's how I feel about it. The outlandish flashbacks, the obnoxious... you know, imagination getting the best of you as a kid and everything. And that's what Christmas Story is for me. Kind of almost a similar era, you
Definitely.
Know, the old era and everything. And I just love that. I love the reminiscence of childhood and how you perceived everything, and somebody narrating it to you. Back in the day, it was a big deal, and now we were laughing about it. You know, that's kind of the vibe I get.
Mm-hmm.
And I love it, man. 8.5. It's a great, great flick to throw on.
What about you, Sean?
Yeah, man, I truly think this movie's a masterpiece. When I say it should be considered an art film, I do actually believe that and reiterate that. Just like the way that it's structured is so, like, you don't see movies do this nowadays, especially nowadays. It's just like they don't make ensemble movies like this and have you focus on one character and then a group of characters and then the one character again, kind of. They just don't do that nowadays. And I was shocked. I rewatched this movie like maybe 3 or 4 years ago and was just completely taken by that. I'm just like, I've never seen movies do this anymore. And it works so well, and I don't know why people don't do it anymore, but what was I, like an 8.5?
You were an 8 on the dot.
An 8 on the dot. I am a 9.5. I think this movie's a masterpiece and will... Oh, well, like just like I said, like baseball will always stand up and live the test of time. Like new generations of kids keep watching it and keep loving it just as much as we did, and so I think it will continue to do that.
It's like a testament to the sanctity of baseball and friendship.
Yeah,
of like they could have easily just said fuck you, Smalls. Like, good luck, because you just ruined your life. But they did. They not only wanted to help their friend get that ball back, but they also believed in the sanctity of that ball, right, because of how important Babe Ruth was, mm-hmm, to their game. Exactly. And I mean, it's that meme, right, where there's the photo of the Sandlot kids, and it says, at some point in your childhood, you and your friends went outside to play together for the last time, and nobody knew it.
Oh, shit.
God, like, I chilled all over my bodies, and it's just such a perfect way to put all that into a movie and a vibe. And even some of the things that get said, like, meant so much more to me today when Benny says, stop thinking, have fun.
Yeah, man.
I have problems. Definitely. When I, in my band, like, all I do is think.
Yep.
I very rarely sometimes stop and be like, this is fucking awesome. Mm-hmm. And I started doing that recently after watching this. And that whole thing that everybody has one chance to do something great. Mm-hmm. You have one chance. You got to take it when you get it. Heroes get remembered. Legends never die. Right. Like,
man,
it makes you think about that. Take whatever you're doing to the next level and like go beyond and make something legendary out of it. It's fantastic. I mean, I'm it's by no means like my favorite sports movie ever, but it's so good. So I'm up to an 8 on this one.
Nice.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Hearing those lines as a kid, I think is so important. And like you're saying, Sean, the fact that new kids keep watching this and enjoying it and loving it, and it kind of keeps going through these generations of people, and hearing lines that legends never die, and you got to take your shot. You get one shot sometimes, and that's all you got. And, you know, do something special. Have your friends. I just think it's such a great thing that happens throughout time.
This movie is legendary.
Yeah.
And it will always be remembered.
Yep. Yeah. There's a reason why thousands of people went to the reunion, the cast reunion, to rewatch the movie, because it meant so much to them. So. Yeah,
absolutely.
Well, we hope you enjoyed the episode. As of the recording at the end of June 2021, this is available for free on Hulu with a subscription. Otherwise, you have to purchase it on a streaming platform or pop in that old VHS or DVD. Tune in next Wednesday as we drop back into Mini Bite Land to tackle Super Nintendo, Sega Genesis. When I was dead broke, man, I couldn't picture this.
Shit.
50-inch screen, money, green, leather sofa. Okay.
Oh, anyway, shit.
We're going to talk to Super Nintendo, Sega Genesis. Yeah. And after that, back to the summertime classic movie reviews. This is a Patreon/AJ pick.
Oh.
Heavyweights.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, dude. I'm so excited.
It's going to be fantastic. So AJ, take them out. How can they find us? How can they support us, baby?
The best way to support us is, like we said, the very beginning of this episode. With all those reviews, make sure you're telling your friends in any way possible that you can, because we just appreciate that so much. But you can definitely find us on any platform that you can hear podcasts. That would be Apple Podcasts, Spotify, CastBox, Stitcher, Pocket Box Cast. Pocket Cast. And but any platform you can listen to podcasts on, you can find us there. Make sure you're dropping us a review when you can. 5 stars, thumbs ups, hit the subscribe button, and make sure you're following along on social media. That's Facebook.com/ConfusedBreakfast, Twitter, ConfusedBeFast, but then we got Instagram, and that's ConfusedBreakfast, and of course, TikTok, ConfusedBreakfast.
Shit, yeah.
Don't forget that voicemail, 319-804-9596. I think that's it for us, huh?
Get on that Patreon, man. I am looking at a print of one of our shirts right now, and you could totally buy those right now, folks. Telling you.
And actually, to the Patreon people, we have not yet offered this up to the public, so Patreon gets first dibs. We haven't forgot about you.
No.
We're printing them as we speak, so they are coming soon.
Edit that out.
Okay, goodbye.